What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the busiest lady in the business, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Greg?
I hear video games are pretty good, Andrea.
Oh, they are so, so good.
Yesterday, you were too busy to come do the show, so Gary Witta stepped in. You were playing Anthem. Tell me all about it.
Greg, I would love to tell you everything that I got to play yesterday, but unfortunately, there's an embargo until tomorrow.
Boo!
And then there's another embargo for the endgame content for next week.
So that means that you'll be able to talk about Anthem on the What's Good Games podcast Friday.
That's correct.
Okay, just like our own Fran Mirabella. We'll be able to talk about it tomorrow on the Kinda Funny Games cast.
Correct. And Fran and I actually played quite a bit together yesterday. Our stations were next to each other, so he captured...
Did you keep disconnecting his stuff?
No. That's what I would have done. Of course not. He was on my team. I wanted him to help out.
Sure.
So you're saying
there's teams in Anthem. Breaking news.
You have to squad up in Anthem. our voice chat is on all of his capture. So good. If you watch any of his content, you will definitely
see us. Now, it's funny you talk about playing with Fran for a game that's embargoed. Another embargo just lifted that you went and played with Fran as well. Isn't that right?
I've seen him at all of the preview events this month.
What did you guys play before this?
So we played co-op in Far Cry New Dawn.
Ooh, how was that?
That is surprisingly really fun.
Really?
So here's the thing about Far Cry New Dawn. It looks great. It clearly is built in the world of Far Cry 5.
Yeah.
It very much feels like a standalone expansion for Far Cry 5. It doesn't feel like a brand new game because it's clearly a continuation of the events that happen in Far Cry 5. The world looks great. It's set 17 years after the events of Far Cry 5, I believe. I would need to double check my notes.
Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong.
let me just check my notes. I have it.
I mean, that's one way to do it.
17 years, yes. And it includes... we played Act 1 of New Dawn. There is created characters you get to pick, much like in Far Cry 5, if you want to have a specific gender. They unveiled the new villain, these twins, and how they're kind of, you know, ruling everything. It's good. It's more Far Cry 5.
Yeah.
And so if you really like that and really enjoyed that game, you're going to enjoy
it. I mean, does
new
it
Dawn.
Feel exactly like that, or does it feel different enough where it's like, oh, if you didn't get turned on by some part of Far Cry 5, there's a reason to come to it?
Hard to say. They have added some new RPG-ish mechanics to New Dawn, which I think could be interesting. But if you don't like, you know, an action-based first-person shooter game, you're not going to like Far Cry New Dawn.
Yeah, I enjoyed
the
Far
gameplay
Cry
5. Is fundamentally the
Did you
same.
Beat Far Cry 5? I forget.
I didn't finish the final mission, but I watched John finish it.
Sure.
So I played through quite a bit of that game.
Yeah, it was. Nick played a ton of it, but that was the thing. Me, him, and I think Kev were playing it pretty hardcore when it first dropped. But I forget what happened that the next game came and I got distracted and never went back to it. And so now I'm in this weird spot of sometimes I think about it, I'm like, I should go back and finish that, or should I wait for this, or should I, you know what I mean? Like, it's more Far Cry. It's always just going to be more Far Cry.
Right.
Clearly, Outpost, go kill a bunch of guys, be sneaky. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, well, they've added a lot of features for people who really loved Far Cry 5 and spent a lot of time in that world. They've added an Outpost escalator system that adds replayability for New Dawn.
Okay.
So you can essentially defeat an outpost and then you can reset it and or abandon it, as they call it, so that the highwaymen, who are like the villain group, can retake it, and then you can go back and reconquer it for additional rewards.
Gotcha.
Which is nice for people who want to have a lot of replayability in their game. It's a good value. They've added a bunch of new guns for hire, so new characters that they've added.
Everything irradiated? Do I have to worry about like Fallout stuff? Am I eating rads and stuff?
No, it's not quite like that.
Okay.
There are certain areas that are. One of the things that I really liked from the demo that I played is that they refer back to some of the events that happened in Far Cry 5. For example, when I went on a Guns for Hire mission to meet one of these new characters, the location where it was set was one of the boss fights from one of the three siblings. And I don't want to give too much away
for spoiler reasons.
But there's a bunch of references to what happened there, and it was a really nice callback to be like, oh, I vividly remember, like,
I know this area, I know
being
this thing.
In this spot in the main game. So that was really cool. They have three difficulty modes, and they have lots of, they're kind of doing more of a base building focus. So Prosperity is kind of the home base for your character to make a resistance against the highwaymen and these twins. And so you can upgrade different parts of Prosperity. Like, for example, they have an infirmary, and if you upgrade that by gathering consumable things from the world, it will improve the way you use your health potions, for example. people.
Gotcha.
So stuff like that. That's so they've really added like a lot of layers of RPG mechanics into the game for people who want to spend a lot of time in that world.
Cool.
But it looks great.
Are you coming back? Are you going to go back in? You going to jump in?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because right now I am very excited. Obviously for Anthem, we've got the VIP demo this weekend. Yeah. We've got the demo the weekend after. I still want to play another run through of Resident Evil. I may dip my toes into Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, wow. Okay. Ooh, that maybe. won't take. Don't get excited. That won't take.
No, probably not. Exactly. I'll probably get like a couple hours in and be like, what is this? What is this sort of
Brit, explain all this to me. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, exactly.
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. There at the bronze tier, you can submit questions. At the silver tier, you can get the show ad-free as an MP3 and video, along with every other Kinda Funny Games show we do. Of course, you can watch us record it live, twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/KindaFunnyGames and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you, Arizona. We're coming to party. That's right. Sunday, we will be at the Portillo's in Tempe, Arizona. 11 a.m. We will be there to party with you before we all go to Royal Rumble. Then, Wednesday, January 30th, it's another 12-hour stream for Kinda Funny. That's right. As you remember, January is our fundraising pledge drive month on patreon.com/kindafunnygames. We are funding a world tour. We are bringing back old shows. We are plotting the future of studios and hires and all sorts of things one day. This is the second stream. We hit this during the first stream. So 10 a.m. to... ten a.m. for 12 hours to 12 p.m. Wednesday the 30th. You can hang out with us as we stream on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. And then today, we're brought to you by Robin Hood and Third Love, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news! Three items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen!
Now, Kevin, I don't like lying to you, so I'll be very clear, all right? Three items on the Roper Report. However, item number one has three parts. It's under the subheading of crazy-ass video game industry numbers. Because yesterday, they put out a whole bunch of NPD numbers and everything went fucking crazy. Let's start with the ESA, who reports that U.S. video game sales reach record-breaking $43.4 billion in 2018. The U.S. video game industry generated a record $43.4 billion in revenue in 2018, up 18% from 2017, according to new data released today by the Entertainment Software Association, the ESA, and the NPD Group. Quote, 2018 was another record-setting year for the U.S. video game industry as consumer spending jumped 18% to over $43 billion, said Matt Piscatella, friend of the show, video games industry analyst for the NPD Group. Console, PC, and mobile platforms all saw significant growth, while developing portions of the market like subscription and streaming services gave us a peek into a future full of possibilities for the industry and gamers. Both hardware revenue, which includes peripherals, and software revenue across all platforms, console, PC, portable, and mobile, from physical and digital sales, including in-game purchases and subscription, experienced record growth in 2018. For comparison, Andrea Renee, hardware, including peripherals, is up 15%. Software, including in-game subscriptions and purchases and subscriptions, is up 18%. And then that means overall up 18% total. $43.4 billion compared to $36.9 billion. Andrea, when are we getting our cut? When is the industry kicking it back to us?
Apparently,
we talk about the games.
We get paid all the time, Greg, by these publishers, don't you hear?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what the internet says. Now, I would love a cut. I think this is great. I think this is good news for everybody.
No, I would love a cut. And then on to your real point.
Just slide that in there. I'll take your money.
Anyone who's getting that billion, slip Andrew Renee What's Good at check anytime now.
Patreon.com/What's Good Games. This is good news because it means that there's more people making games than ever before. It means more people are playing games. And it means the state of the video game industry union is strong.
That's when everybody would get up and clap, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what you're looking for right there. Yeah, yeah. It was that yesterday it kept being that I was working on stuff in the afternoon and Tim kept stopping me to stay. Dude, listen to this. Wait, listen to this. Because Matt Piscatella was going off on Twitter with all this information. Mm-hmm. Somewhere I want to bring into this conversation. I'm calling it one B, because we already did 1A. This is from GameSpot's roundup of coverage written by Phil over there. Rockstar Games, Red Dead Redemption 2 was the number one selling game of the year, but it was another huge record-breaking year for Nintendo as well, thanks in large part to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Matt Piscatella writes that Smash Bros. Set the record for launch month sales for an exclusive title in December 2018, eclipsing Halo Reach's launch all the way back in 2010. With just 1 month worth of sales, Smash Bros. Managed to take fifth on the NPD list for 2018, and the analysis firm notes that its figures don't include digital sales of the game, which it currently doesn't track. That means Smash Bros. Smashed Reach's record and eclipsed other major releases based on physical sales alone. GameSpot's other headline, this is 1C, also by Phil, though. It was another huge year for Nintendo in 2018, with the company's Switch raking in the most sales of any console for the year in the U.S. The Switch was inarguably the winner of the hardware, according to NPD, though, especially in December. In 2018, Nintendo made more money on console hardware than any company since Sony took 2015 with the PlayStation 4. Nintendo's December 2018 Switch sales were higher for that month than any year since 2009, the year Nintendo had another huge December with sales of its Wii console.
So a couple of questions.
Lay them on me, and I will then say I don't know.
First, in this B subheader, talking about not including digital sales, does that mean none of the games in that list include digital sales? Because that could dramatically alter the ranking if none of those games include digital sales, not just Smash's digital sales, right?
Yeah.
Because digital, there are estimates out there that up to 50% of game sales are digital in the console generation that we're in now. So I would be curious to know that. Maybe this is a kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong thing.
I'm pulling up Matt's Twitter feed. Okay. Here's what I want to tell you right now. Everybody loves news and everything else and all this. You like Games Daily. You all need to be following Matt on Twitter.
I follow Matt.
Well, I know you and I do. But I'm saying, like, when I was looking at it earlier, he had all this information that people are quoting out. Look at this first one. 92 hearts on it. 92 hearts. This man's out there giving you all this information. Nobody's doing it. Follow Matt Piscatella on Twitter. So here we go. I'm just going to read his chain of thoughts here, right?
Sure, go ahead.
Quick hit takes from the December release. Start with Smash. Exceeding every expectation I had. Best-selling exclusive launch month in history. The story of Switch may just be getting started. Smash pushed Switch to highest sales in the year. Amazing performance. The race to the bestseller position in software sales was very close. Call of Duty Black Ops 4 digital sales on PC are not currently tracked by the NPD group and made all the difference to the rankings. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I'm always confused about this. I think it is that Nintendo withholds all their digital download numbers and that they don't count into NPD, but I think, does PlayStation and Microsoft do put it in there now?
I don't know.
And then this
know.
Would be PC, as they're talking about.
Well, because obviously PlayStation announces their rankings for digital sales, but I don't think Microsoft does.
Mm. Then Matt continues, Marvel's Spider-Man finishes the best performing superhero game in almost 15 years. What Insomniac and Sony achieved with this game is absolutely incredible. Another game that surpassed all expectations. But I thought this was really fascinating. But really, the real story of 2018 is Fortnite. Its impact across hardware, accessories, and game cards cannot be overstated. And even though we don't track Fortnite software in this tracking, its impact on software overall was absolutely massive and has changed the industry. 2019 could be a bumpy year. We're closer to the end of life than beginning with PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, so Switch becomes critical to the overall market this year as we transition towards a new gen. 2018 was undeniably a great growth year overall. Shouldn't expect it to continue. But for now, we see a pretty strong market for the bigger software titles, both digitally and packaged. Big games can sell record-breaking amounts. Smaller games, however, have a far more cloudy and risky outlook. But what else is new? In any case, applaud to all the game makers, publishers, folks working retail, distribution, operations, and everybody else that makes video games happen. Thank you! That's all Matt Piscatella. Everybody follow him.
Yeah, one shout out to the GameStop managers.
Power to the players.
So this is exciting. It's good. I would love some more context. The other question I had was when it says from GameSpot, when it says Nintendo made more money on console hardware than any company had since Sony took 2015 with the PS4, that to me seems it needs to be substantiated quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because that's a giant claim, because they don't know what the hardware margins are for Microsoft, for Sony, and for Nintendo. I mean, we can make educated guesses, of course, but I would love to see more data about that.
And
to see exactly, like, who's making money where, because we all know that hardware money is like a, such a finite amount of time that the long tail profitability is in software.
True, true. You're right. That's the whole thing about it is we get into the real businessy side of it. That's when I'm like, I'm a kid and I don't fully understand any of this. So I'm just, I know this is big and these are big numbers and we're going to throw around and do it. But yeah, you need somebody like Matt, who you should be following on Twitter, as we've already said, to get there and clarify all this stuff for him. I've DM'd him to see if he has time for a phone call. We can just call him into the show and have him explain it to us. But for now, we'll continue on. Just letting you know.
Video games could call Michael Pachter too.
We could. Yeah. Number two. Nindies highlight. There was a Nindies highlights yesterday. Not a full blown Nintendo Direct, but a Nindies highlight thing out of the UK. And if you listened, they all had UK accents, and it was very adorable. I'm gonna read from the wrap up over at Adam or at IGN from Adam Bankhurst, who's coming to Kind of Funny Games Daily in the coming weeks. Basically, 9 games were featured during it. And here's the information: Wargroove was featured. It's now coming out February 1st, 2019, on Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PC, with PlayStation 4 arriving shortly after that. At this highlights, they announced SteamWorld Quest: Hand of Gildamech. I didn't say Gildamesh, Gildamech. Releasing in 2019, first on Nintendo Switch. They also showed Cross Code, which will release in 2019 on Switch. Double Kick Heroes, releasing summer 2019, first on Nintendo Switch. Then they had 2 announcements of games that are out right now. Right now, you can get on your Switch When Ski Lifts Go Wrong, and Goat Simulator, the Goaty, right now on your Switch. Forager is coming soon to Switch and PC, and then Inmost will release 2019, first on Nintendo Switch. Also then, rounding out with number 9 was Unruly Heroes. It's available now on Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PC. So I was confused by all this, because mm-hmm. some people wrote in yesterday being like, hey, there's a Direct tonight, and I couldn't find information about it. And then I woke up to this thing, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw it, and it was just like, whatever. I'm glad. It was a weird announcement. But I understand not calling it a Direct, because everybody would have been like, oh, we're talking about your 2019 and all this stuff. Instead, right. It was an indie highlights.
Yeah, this flew completely under the radar for me.
Yeah. Well, here we are. What I do know is that Wargroove looks amazing. It's like an Advanced Wars spiritual successor. I immediately was like, yep, begging people for codes because I'm getting on planes for this weekend or whatever. All right, we're calling Matt Piscatella.
Okay. And we've got some You're Wrong MPD2.
He's gonna You're Wrong.
Hi, this is Matt.
Hey, Matt, it's Greg Miller from Kind of Funny Games Daily. How are you?
Oh, my God, Greg Miller, how you doing?
I'm good. You're live on the internet, by the way. Andrea's here, too.
Hi, Matt.
Oh, right on. Hi, Andrew. What's going on?
All right. So Andrea has a million questions. I'm going to let her go, okay? Because we're reading through all your tweets. We are telling everybody to follow you on Twitter. It's an embarrassment you only have 92 likes in that first tweet, because this is a great tweet storm you have here of information. I love it, and people should be following you about it. But then I'm a child who people look to for news, so I need explanations from the sources. All right, you ready?
Yes.
All right, Andrea, you can lead off.
One of the questions that we...
No, you're fine.
Yeah. One of the questions that we had was, there was an article on GameSpot that claimed that Nintendo made more money on console hardware than any company had since Sony took 2015 with the PS4. Can you tell me how that is substantiated?
So, you mean in terms of the tracking?
Yeah, like, so for example, like, for my question was, like, how do they know that? Like, how do they know what the profitability of the hardware is for each of the console makers?
Well, I don't know about profitability, but in terms of revenue or just total spend, it was the highest since 2015. But unfortunately, I don't know profitability of each of these systems or how they're doing that, so... we just speak to the total sales numbers.
And so, like, gross revenue of all consoles sold?
Correct.
Okay, interesting.
And then the other question we were hung up on is one of the articles we were reading here was calling out, talking about how, you know, Nintendo doesn't report the digital numbers anymore, or to you guys, NPD. Is that just them nowadays, or is that everybody? Do you have digital numbers for some of the companies or not all of them? I can't remember anymore.
So we have most of the major publishers, the ones that are... still not sharing, include Nintendo and Bethesda, are really the two big ones, and we continue to work with them and hope that they'll join the digital leader panel soon. But everyone else, from Sony to Microsoft to Take-Two to Activision to EA and Ubisoft to Warner, Capcom, and down the list, all participate.
Perfect. That's clarifying.
We also saw in our internet, our community has written in to kind of give some extra information, and they said that they had an article from gamesindustry.biz that said that digital sales now represent 74% of the U.S. game market. Would you say that that's accurate?
So it's actually probably a little bit higher than that. We have a release coming out soon with the ESA that's going to detail that, but that includes everything from mobile to PC So it's not just like the console titles. Console titles, digital share is much lower than that. But when you include all aspects of consumer spending, yeah, it's up there, the digital share.
Well, I would imagine if you're including mobile, mobile is digital exclusively, right?
Correct. Yeah, and PC is over 90% digital at this point, plus all of the downloadable content, the microtransactions, that all counts in that percentage.
But do you have any insight as to how much of console sales are digital versus retail?
So it's actually, it goes all across the board. Some titles, like the big mass market titles, will have a slightly lower digital rate. The core titles or online titles will have a higher rate. I think EA had come out recently with about a one-third number. That's digital in the big console market. That's probably a little bit light now, but it's in that range.
Awesome.
That's interesting. I guess retail is still going strong then if it's more than, you know, one-third to two-thirds of the total share.
So physical sales are actually, they've been pretty flat and stable for the last 4 years. We were down slightly this year, like low single-digit percentages. But overall, physical retail game sales are flat. It's just we're seeing massive digital growth, which is shifting share, which has caused like this big, especially the last couple of years, these big growth rates we're seeing year to year. People are still buying physical games pretty much as they have for the last 4 years, but they're buying a heck of a lot more digitally than they used to.
Matt, one of my favorite tweets you had from your, again, great exchange that everybody should follow. Kevin, can you put Matt's Twitter up behind me so people actually follow? Just throw up his Twitter page instead of the thing so people know to go follow this amazing man. My question was, you were talking about the impact of Fortnite, though, right? Though, even though Fortnite's not tracked, you don't have the numbers on it, it's, you know, impact can't be ignored. What exactly do you mean by that? Is it people being brought to mobile platforms, other consoles that they wouldn't be on before?
So what we're seeing is Fortnite having an impact not only in like the software side of things, especially with DLC MTX, but across hardware and accessories, particularly headsets and headphones and gamepads. We see a distinct relationship between what happened with Fortnite and what we saw in terms of spending in these other categories. We also think that Fortnite has brought new players to the console space, which has been a little bit of the reason why we're seeing such a strong console marketplace in 2018. We just put out a release with the Entertainment Software Association yesterday talking about total market sales. And when you look at the total picture across mobile, across PC, console, accessories, Fortnite had a major impact on the year, contributing to the big growth rates. And the big question now is what happens this year? Does anything else new pop up, kind of like Fortnite did a year ago? Or are we going to struggle to kind of maintain that momentum that Fortnite helped establish this year?
Fascinating.
I mean, 2.4 billion is going to be a really difficult number to match yet top.
Yeah, the numbers that Fortnite has helped push, along with like the peak performance of PS4 and Xbox One and the huge growth in Switch, along with the continuing growth in mobile, we've had a very great period of expansion of the market. And, you know, we really have to wait and see what game creators, game makers can come up with next. Or, you know, is streaming going to take off? What's going to happen with subscription spending? Like, how are we going to continue the growth rates? I think is the question everyone's working on.
I think it's pretty simple. It's Patapon 2 Remastered. Sony didn't, okay. They didn't release it this year. It's got to come eventually, and that'll be the one.
Don't encourage him, Matt. Don't let him do it.
Hey, man. Pat a pawn, baby. Let's
that's
go.
My man. That's my man. Matt, thank you so much for your time on this impromptu phone call and interview.
No worries. Cheers.
All right, bye. What a nice young man.
He is very nice.
There you go. Thank you, Kevin, for the audible on getting it up there. Number three, probably the biggest news of the day that I buried in the Roper Report. There is a Farming Simulator League, everybody. It's official. It's starting. This is from, of course, the Farming Simulator folks. After testing the waters in 2018 with the first season of the Farming Simulator Championship, Giants Software is ready to dive deeper into the world of esports with the upcoming Season 2. Major changes lie ahead when the Farming Simulator Championship becomes the Farming Simulator League, a full-fledged esports league with 10 tournaments across Europe. At the end of the season, the best teams will compete for the title of the Farming Simulator Champion and €100,000 in prizes. Every single tournament will not only grant circuit points for the best team, but also wield big prizes, bringing the total prize pool for season two up to a total of €250,000. Now, you may say, is it the same rules as before, though, Greg? They're going from a championship to a league. Is it the same? It is not, ladies and gentlemen. Not only will the new league be held in the brand new Farming Simulator 19, but it will also move from bale stacking to a competitive 3v3 mode where teams challenge each other to determine who is the best on the field. The game will, of course, stand true to its roots in farming and combine real field work like harvesting with fun and challenging game elements. Giant Software will reveal more about the new game mode in the near future. So just a heads up, that's awesome. I put it in as a little bit of a laugh, obviously.
Yeah.
But I put it in because that's fucking awesome. There's such a dedicated community that they're like, let's get everyone and start a league.
This is the game that just keeps going. I have been getting press releases for Farming Simulator for years. And it's never a game that I've gotten into or really found any interest in, despite the fact that I'm from a farming state and I'm from a farming family from North Dakota. But there are hundreds of thousands of people around the world that love Farming Simulator. Dare I say millions of people around the world.
I think you share. You should say, I think you share. Sure. God damn it. Okay. I'm excited to see what word I bumble next, but it's going to happen in a long time, hopefully. Andrew, if I wanted more pertinent news, like what came to the mom and grab shops, where would I go?
Greg, you would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, Switchblade has gone free to play on Steam, PC, and the PlayStation 4. Heroes Trials comes to Xbox One. Sticky Bots is coming out on Steam. It was previously in early access. The Walking Vegetables Radical Edition comes to Xbox One. Unruly Heroes, that comes to Nintendo Switch, Steam, Microsoft Store, and Xbox One. Misama Caves comes to Steam early access. And then The Spy Who Shot Me comes to early access as well for Steam.
I'm double checking that Walking Vegetables because I know you guys talked about it yesterday.
I think yesterday was the PlayStation version today, and then Xbox today. Of course, just a reminder of you two, When Ski Lifts Go Wrong on Switch is out now and Goat Simulator is out on Switch right now as well. Then new dates for you. Steam World Quest, The Hand of Gilgamesh is coming to Switch in 2019. Space Boy Games and... Hacky Zack is coming to PlayStation 4. The game will be available to download on February 12th and 13th in North America and the EU, respectively. Again, Wargroove finally coming out February 1st, PC, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One. And then again, saving the best for last, the biggest news. American Ninja Warrior is launching on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Switch March 19th, 2019. Yeah. Where is the Titan Games, though? That's what I need to know. The Rock. Golden Boy. That's the video game I need.
They gotta make sure that show is successful first.
You put The Rock on anything, it's gonna be successful, except that Page movie they're making right now. That looks really bad. But anything else, he's gonna knock it out of the park and make $1 million. You seen the trailer?
Yeah.
You think it looks good?
I'm excited to see it.
You think it looks good?
I'm excited to see it.
Kevin, you are under oath. Do you think the movie looks good?
I'm interested in it.
Time for reader mail. But first, I'm going to tell you about our sponsors. Today, we're sponsored by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, yeah, that's right, options and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. This is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. It's simple and intuitive, clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Kevin Coelho from KindaFunny.com uses Robinhood, and he loves it because it's a clean app and there are no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge a commission. Be like Kevin. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Robinhood is giving my listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at games.robinhood.com. That's games.robinhood.com. Our second sponsor is Third Love. Let's talk about bras, Andrea.
Okay.
Using millions of real women's measurements, Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind for an impeccable fit and incredible feel. Third Love is the industry leader with 70 sizes, including its signature half cup sizes. Skip the trip. Find your fit in 60 seconds with Third Love's online fit finder. Order and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. But don't take my word for it. Take my wife's. She ordered from Third Love and the size wasn't quite right. Of course, returning the bra was free, and the fit stylist helped Jen find an even better bra as a replacement. Does Jen like her new bra? You betcha. She told me, quote, it doesn't feel cheap like most bras. It's mostly meant to be worn strapless, but it still came with two sets of straps. Two sets of straps, people! Be like Jen. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to order your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today.
Their lounge bras are also very comfortable.
What's a lounge bra?
So it doesn't have any underwire, and it's a lot more comfortable to kind of like lay around in. Like the straps aren't as uncomfortable.
So it's like boxer shorts for your boobs.
Yes.
Got it. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Nailed it. That does sound good.
Yeah, because you need a little bit of support, Greg.
Sure.
You know, like going up and down stairs can be painful.
Just like boxer shorts, but I digress and we won't get too visual on that one. Blackjack writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to the bronze tier, just like you can for every Kind of Funny Game show, and says, hey, Greg, with Andrea being fresh off her Anthem hands-on, I have one major question. Does she still think it's possible for me to complete this game totally solo? I'm usually a lone wolf, single-player type of gamer, but Anthem looks so cool and has me intrigued. Would I be able to get to the level 30 cap alone, or will the enemies not scale correctly and turn into horrible bullet sponges? Thanks for all the great work. Blackjack, you know she can't answer that. We said she's embargoed.
But I can answer that because they have already answered this.
Blackjack, I'm sorry. I'll give it to Andrew now.
So the team at BioWare has been really good about answering fan questions on Twitter. They've also answered press questions at a couple of preview events ahead of the event this week. They have said many times over that, yes, you can complete Anthem by yourself because there will be matchmaking for everything in Anthem. So you don't have to be friends with people. You don't have to, you know, coordinate with like an LFG to have the full Anthem experience. That being said, it's designed to be played co-op. It's a co-op game. And so while you will be, air quotes here, playing solo, there will be people being match-made into some of the events that you do. But when I spoke with Mike Gamble back at PAX earlier this year when we were talking to them, I had asked about the matchmaking process, and they said, we're designing it in such a way that you don't have to be on voice comms in order to be successful playing with people. Uh-huh. We want people to be able to drop in and drop out very quickly and not have to worry about getting into extensive, you know, conversations with people. It's not like doing a Destiny raid, for example.
Sure. Okay.
So I can expand on it more later in the week, but this Friday, is all publicly available information that, no, you do not need to be in a group. You can play the entire game solo.
Here's the other question I have for you, and again, this is not violating your embargo, because your embargo is very much about like specifics of what you played and what you did.
Correct.
We already knew you liked this game. We already did this stuff.
Yes.
Yesterday I was talking to Gary about it. What do you how big is Anthem going to be? Do you think it's going to be this giant thing? Is it going to usurp Destiny? Does it have a chance to usurp? Is it going to be just for a small group? Like, where right now, gazing into your crystal ball,
it's really hard to know.
Yeah.
Because even though I've gotten to see, you know, a lot more of the game recently, it's still hard to say like how the gameplay loop is going to progress post-launch, because that really is what kept Destiny going, at least in the later years. Clearly, Destiny Vanilla like had a lot of issues with content, and they have made substantial changes over several years to where Destiny 2 is with Forsaken today. And I hope that BioWare and EA are committed to continuing to make content. Everything they've said publicly indicates that they are.
Yeah.
You know, back at the pre-briefing that I did at the Game Awards, they talked about, you know, that they have some post-launch plans already in the works and that they have more to announce soon. But that, you know, they really want to just get the main game out the gate and get it into people's hands. And that's what the VIP demo this weekend is really all about, is really putting that first stress test on their servers, because everything I've seen from the game so far looks great. I've said this before on the show. Every time I see the game, it looks better and better, and I'm more and more excited.
Yeah.
The really nerve-wracking thing is if they stumble with their servers out the gate, it could be really detrimental to them, knowing that there's a lot of people that are still salty about Andromeda, which, by the way, like, just let it go. Andromeda is a good game. It had problems at launch. It's much better now. If you missed it, go back and play it.
I still want to get back to it now that I've done the Star Trek stuff. But I didn't want to start it then going on to Arizona and then Quebec next week.
So I'm excited that BioWare is going in this new direction. I spoke to Mike Gamble at length about it yesterday. You'll be able to hear that, you know, later on What's Good Games, but, it's going to be exciting. I know that everybody in my Destiny 2 clan is hype for this game, and we're all talking about taking a break from Destiny to play Anthem together. So
we'll have to wait and see then.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear your impression.
Yeah, the biggest key difference that I want to remind people is there's no PvP in Anthem, and that's a giant part of Destiny. So
that sounds great, though.
Yeah, they're inherently going to have, you know, attract different audiences.
I did the Crucible once just to get the trophy and then got the hell out. Got my platinum and bounced. Don't need to do that. Thank you very much. Ryan, a.k.a. Rocky, 1982, writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can to be part of all of our shows. It says, hi, Greg, Tim, Jared, Fran, and or Andrea. Sorry, couldn't find a show host this week. In the UK, our government is seeking responses on immersive addictive technologies, parentheses, or is video gaming addictive to kids, to you and me? This got me thinking. Should it be the state, the parents, or the game's producers that should take responsibility? My own opinion is that it is the parents, I am one, that should take responsibility both in terms of vetting content and usage. To put the responsibility on game producers is akin to asking a movie studio to make their film worse so that less people rewatch it. Surely, for those non-gamer parents, education is key, which I would hope the state and game producers would think of before them. I'd be interested to hear kind of funny thoughts and opinions. Hoping you make it to the 75,000 mark on the second live stream on Wednesday, January 3rd, so you can come to London, baby. Thanks. Ryan, a.k.a. PSN Rocky 1982, Shropshire, England. Whose responsibility is to keep these kids safe, Andrea?
It's obviously the parents' responsibility to keep their children safe. That said, I think that there is... it's good that the industry is having conversation around it.
Yeah.
It was interesting that this came up in the questions because earlier this month, I wanted to talk about a story when Jared and I were hosting that we ended up cutting from the show because we just got to talking and got too long. But the ESA, who we were talking about earlier today, had a dialogue with the World Health Organization. You guys remember last year who classified this new disorder gaming disorder, and so the ESA has been meeting with them to talk about what that means and really like how they can really dismantle that disorder as something that is not a thing. So there's a quote here from the ESA. It says, meeting with WHO enabled us to engage in conversations about the positive impact video games have on more than 2.6 billion players worldwide. We believe that continued conversation and education is needed before any classification is finalized. In fact, leading mental health experts have cautioned repeatedly that classifying gaming disorder creates a risk of misdiagnosis for patients who need most help. It is for our hope that continued dialogue, we can help the WHO avoid rushed action and mistakes that could take years to correct. The billions of video game players around the world who will be affected by an ICD-11 classification error deserve action based on meticulous research. As an industry, we are committed to collaborating with stakeholders, researchers, policymakers, and parents to ensure best-in-class ratings, parental controls, and other tools to help video game players and parents understand and manage healthy video game playing. So I'd like that the ESA is involved on a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Proactive front.
Correct. Yeah. They're trying to get ahead of it.
For me, it takes a village. Like, I think, what a child is ingesting, whether it be food or content or whatever, is the primary concern of the parent, right? In terms of them being involved in their child's lives and so on and so forth. However, I don't think we can sit there and be like, well, they can then put whatever you want into video games and there's no responsibility on the creator. And I'm not saying responsibility on the creator not to put it in. I'm saying to advertise with, you know, what we see with the ESRB, right? And make those ratings make sense. It's what we were talking about earlier in the year when we did the deal with the ESRB, right? About like how you guys use ratings. Like, there needs to be an open, honest dialogue. And so nobody's hiding what it is. You know what I mean? When I was a kid growing up, you know, my parents, if it was going to be an R movie and I really wanted to see it, they would look into what was actually happening in that movie and why it got the R and stuff that, right? And I know at video games, me growing up, it was a not Wild West situation, but it was harder for my mom to understand why people were freaked out about it. When you hear one horrible story about Mortal Kombat, you don't understand that doesn't apply to every game or everything I'm trying to bring in. So you don't want these like Trojan horses coming into your house that you think are one thing and then you get in there and they are, it looks like a Mickey Mouse on the outside. Inside, sex game. You know what I mean? Like it just needs to be what the ESRB is saying. It needs to be parents paying attention to what the kids are playing and how it's making them react. And like, you know, I remember when I, you know, my mom hearing me curse once over when I was like mad at a video game, something on Genesis, right? There was a conversation about that. It didn't stick. I'll fucking say whatever I want now. But at the time, it was like, you know what I mean? Like, why are you so angry? What's happening? Like, don't, why, you know, like that. And that's, my, you know, the benefit of my parents being able to be those kind of parents. And I understand that every family dynamic is different in terms of maybe your parents are working, you know, you as a parent are working crazy shifts. So someone's taking care of the kids and they're taking care of, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's a million different things to it, but
right.
It is about having that conversation. And I'm glad to see what we're talking about, the ESRB, the ESA, everybody be part of this and understand that it's not about raising your defenses. It is about actually, okay, cool. Let's hear your side of it. How can we work together better?
Let's have a dialogue about it. And I think the really important thing to remember is that different countries around the world have different cultural standards. Right? Here in the United States, we value free speech above almost everything else. It's, you know, First Amendment. And so the idea that we're trying to... Yeah, that deserves a clap. The idea that, you know, you would try to maybe censor a game maker, right? But it's a debate that we get into a lot. You know, we talk about, you know, curation of platforms and people censoring games, and it all kind of leads to a bigger dialogue about like what is good and what is bad. Like, where is the morality code lie? And I would say, you know, like if you're worried about a game being addictive for a child, it's something that maybe you should do a lot of research into, play it yourself, see what it is like, you know, maybe ask people for some referrals and then decide as a parent what's best for your child. But to put that responsibility on somebody else is not the right call.
100%.
Like it's 100% on the parent's responsibility to make sure that their child is not, you know, ingesting, as you mentioned, food, games, whatever, something that is inappropriate. And that's what is inappropriate should be your call as their parent.
Yes.
I don't think anybody else should be telling you what's inappropriate for your kid.
Well said. Emily Thornton writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can. It says, hey guys, as someone who doesn't enjoy gaming with others online, I'm a little worried about Death Stranding. Sources say the game will have a, quote, transformative online experience, end quote, but there are no details on what on if this online aspect will link to the main storyline. I'm worried this will take away from the main storyline and ruin the experience I've waited so long for. Do you guys have any theories about what the online side of the game will be like? Do you share the same worries that I have, or should I quit whining and wait for Kojima to bless us all once again? Thanks, Emily. Andrew, I've had a theory for a long time.
Tell me about it, Greg.
I interviewed Kojima back at RTX, Sydney, well, a long time ago, right, Kev? 2017, right? 2-hour interview. It's up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And we were talking about Death Stranding, and he said something to the effect of, I'm like, are you excited for people to play? And he was talking about this stuff, and he was like, well, the game's already begun, right? And like he includes marketing in that. He includes the trailers and stuff. I still stand by that this transformative online experience is not going to be, hey, we're all playing Team Deathmatch or Capture the Flag. I think it's going to be when you start that game, it's like, cool, let's link it to, you're already linked to your PSN, we'll say, but, no, we will say, you're already linked to your PSN, but link it to your Facebook, link it to your Twitter, link it to, you know, whatever, Instagram, maybe, right? And I feel like, as you play through that game, I don't know if it's going to be NPCs are pulling off Matt Piscatella's name or something, if it's going to be, I'm finding burned out photo albums that are people I follow on Instagram that are, I think it's going to be that kind of thing, where it's not overt in your face, but it's going to try to make you feel like, oh my God, this was my world and something on that level happened. And I have no inside information whatsoever, but I feel like everything they've shown seems like such a traditional Hideo Kojima game of batshit crazy storyline. Will you be able to keep up with it? But single player, what would transformative online really look like? I don't think it's going to be something we can say, oh, or predict in terms of, oh, it's just going to be 3v3.
I think the last really poignant transformative online experience that came to mind first was Journey, and how a lot of people didn't even realize that that was an online experience until you get to the end of the game, you know? And I really love the innovation in that kind of an experience. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what Kojima is going to do with it, because using a word like transformative has, you know, I think setting expectations high.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm trying to manage my expectations for what that game's going to be, because it's so weird.
I have no expectations so far. Everybody's like, are you excited? I'm like, I'm just excited to find out what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm a delivery guy and I'm delivering babies in bottles. All right. And there's invisible people coming after me.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that.
You're wearing some weird square backpack thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Like, all right. What's going on?
Give me the sticks already. But yeah, I think, I wouldn't worry, Emily, in terms of the online experience being something that's going to take away from you as a single player gamer. I think it's going to, if I'm guessing, and I am, I think no matter what, I think it's just going to be used to embellish and embolden the single player experience rather than detract from it. Mm-hmm. Now watch me be wrong, and it is all, it's an MMORPG and we have to play with each other, but no. I don't think you'll see that. Final question of the day comes from Patrick, and it's more of a call to arms for Kingdom Hearts fans.
Oh my gosh.
Patrick says, hey Greg and Andrea, yesterday Greg and Gary had the conversation about how the plot of Kingdom Hearts makes no sense and cannot be understood. This comes up nearly every time Kingdom Hearts 3 is brought up in on Games Daily and seems to be a popular opinion on gaming focused podcasts. As a fan of the series who has grown up playing the games, I think the story makes sense if you play the games. In fact, the story is one of my favorite parts of Kingdom Hearts. It is an odd story for sure, but so is every story that isn't grounded in reality. To me, trying to explain Kingdom Hearts to someone is like explaining Harry Potter or Star Wars to someone who has never consumed any amount of either franchise. This isn't to say that someone can't jump into Kingdom Hearts 3 and have a great time, but accusing Kingdom Hearts of having an overly confusing story because you can't jump into the series at Kingdom Hearts 2 or Kingdom Hearts 3 seems odd to me, as we don't expect the same treatment from other games or other storytelling media. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Loving Kinda Funny 4.0 so far, and hope you both give Kingdom Hearts 3 a try.
Patrick, you're so wrong.
Oh!
Patrick, yeah! You're just so wrong. And I feel confident saying that because my dear friend, Alex Ray Correa, who is the author of Kingdom Hearts 2 from Boss Fight Books, you should pick that up if you are a Kingdom Hearts fan, has admitted that it's a convoluted story, and she knows that story better than literally anybody else that I personally know. That being said, I also disagree with your comparison to Harry Potter and Star Wars. You can absolutely go in midway to either of those series and not be completely lost as to what's happening, because the archetype of both of those stories is a very classic good versus evil narrative, where, and that's not what's happening in Kingdom Hearts at all. And so I appreciate your fandom, and I think it's great that there's a lot of people out there who are incredibly excited for Kingdom Hearts 3, but I think it's okay to also admit that it's a very complicated story and to wear it maybe as a badge of honor to be like, hey, like, I understand this story. Yeah, it's weird and complicated, but I still love it. That's okay.
And that's the thing. I feel like, Patrick, you sound a lot like a young Greg Miller who would argue with people when, hey, Metal Gear is a weird story. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yes,
it makes perfect sense. And I'd sit there and explain for an hour and a half what the hell was trying to go on. La-le-lu-le-lo. But like... Again, yeah, I haven't played the Kingdom Hearts games, so you're right. From when I'm like, why is, what's going on? How are they in these worlds? Blah, blah. It's me. Yesterday was a lot of me and Gary good-naturedly ribbing the game. Obviously, we understand if you play the games, they make sense to you.
Yeah.
But even like I was talking about it yesterday, where when Tim had Alexa and Dornbush on, they had a long conversation about like, all right, try to explain this to me, because even to me as a fan, Tim doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah. Everything's complicated if you don't know anything about it. You know what I mean? You're going to sit there right now and tell me, wait a second. Jonathan Kent's Superboy, but he went away to this other dimension, and now he's come back and he's 17, but then Young Justice has got Connell in it. How does that work, Greg? And I'm like, we have to see what Michael Bendis has. Brian Michael Bendis has a bunch of ideas, and we'll see.
Patrick, my takeaway here is don't feel bad that I think that you're wrong. Just be like, it's okay.
Fair? Sure.
Love what you love, man.
Love what you love. That is a good one. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to squad up. This is where one of you writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You give me your name, username, platform of choice. I read it here. The best friends come and find you, and everybody has a good time together. Today, Joey Washburn needs help on PlayStation 4. His PlayStation Network username, or hers, is Washburn135. It'll be in the YouTube video. Hey everyone, I'm looking for some help in The Division. I'd really like to hit level 30 and dabble in some of the post-game content before The Division 2 launches on March 15th. I played solo to level 15 and I'm looking to finish out the game with some best friends. Feel free to add me, Washburn135. Everybody, find Joey, play stuff, enjoy yourself. Andrea?
Yes, Greg.
It's time to check in on You're Wrong. This is where people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames can go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe.
I want to give a shout out to Matt Exposure. I referenced your gamesindustry.biz article when we were on the phone with Matt, so thank you for writing that in. And then we do have a big full MPD list here from Mario 3D, which I thought was interesting because on this list there's a lot of asterisks that either do not include digital sales or do not include PC digital sales. And on this list, most notably with not including PC digital sales, we've got FIFA 19 and Battlefield 5 because they're pretty far down the list, whereas FIFA was the number 2 selling game of last year, I believe.
Yes,
overall.
Right.
So it's interesting just to kind of like look at the breakdown, and also fascinating to hear Matt talk about digital sales overall.
Yeah.
Of course, it makes sense that the number is incredibly high when you factor in PC and mobile into that number because those platforms, well, mobile is exclusively digital and then PC,
even
as you mentioned.
PC pretty much is.
Yeah, I mean, you buy a box for a PC game and there's literally like a piece of paper with a code inside. It's really dumb.
Mitch S. writes in and says, missed deal of the day. PlayStation Plus free games for January. You all were off when this deal started and I don't believe it has been brought up this month. Andrea would be super bummed if we missed it because one of the free games is Amplitude for PlayStation 3 and PS4.
That's exciting.
Didn't want the Kind of Funny Best Friends to miss out on this supposed gem. Cheers. That is correct.
Did you just say supposed gem?
He's never played it. Even though it's been free for 21 days, he's never played it.
It is
I remember before the end of January, get on if you're a PlayStation Plus member, download those things as well. Matt cleared up you're wrong a lot for us, so it's very good. Thank you very much. Kebab says Kingdom Hearts story is good versus evil. The guys in black hoods are evil. Who knew? It just does have a lot of convoluted retcons, and let's stop to explain this just one more time. Moments that become very important later, though. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work. I don't know, man. And then Zaire says deal of the day, you can get Hitman 2 for $30 on Amazon. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Thanks for watching with us. Remember, you can be part of the show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can watch live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. You can listen on podcast services around the globe. Andrea will be talking about Anthem on What's Good Games on Friday. Go over there, watch it. Fran will be talking about it tomorrow on the Kind of Funny Games cast. I'm sure more Far Cry as well. And then tomorrow, your host is me and Andy McNamara from the one and only Game Informer.
He's lovely. You guys should all tune in.
If you don't know him, get ready to know him, ladies and gentlemen. Andrea, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.